Hey, Alan.
All right. Hi, everybody. My name's Alan. I'm a grateful abstaining compulsive overeater. I'm also a relapse survivor. I've been in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous for 48 years. Came in 1975, so I guess that qualifies me as a long timer. And I've been absent by the grace of God for 38 years, I think. If I do my math right, I'll have to do a little mathematics here. But I say that to let you know that that's strictly as a result of the miracles of the program, because that's not something that should happen to somebody like me, at least according to my history. I love the fact of the idea of this being a long timers meeting, because you know, many of you will know a lot of the things that I remembered. You know, when I came into my first meeting, there was no OA books, right? It was 1975. No books existed. We had outside literature up the wazoo, okay? Because they were self-help books, you know? Had your erroneous zones and I'm okay, you're okay. Those were the two books that I remember. And, you know, and every other 12-step information, you know. So kind of going back to where I started is, you know, I was an obese child. I was the kid who went to the Husky shops, you know, in the store. I went to Robert Hall's Husky shop. And each year, you know, I would change in size. I'd go from the 14 Huskies to the 16 Huskies to the 18 Huskies to the 20 Husky selection, you know, that small selection. And by the way, just so I could make myself more normal, I have superpowers. For those who don't know, okay, I'm a sponsor man. Okay, that's the superpower. And I hope that many of you have those same powers, because that's really the first gift that I got. As I came to that meeting, that first meeting, and a man who I didn't know, or at least in my second meeting, he asked me how my week went. And I started the Sunday before Thanksgiving. Okay. And I said it was good. I mean, naturally I ate on Thanksgiving, you know, which by the way, I was still eating at that point, you know, till that Sunday. That just seems so normal. And I try and remember back. I'm grateful for the absence I have. And I'm grateful that that I've had more abstinent Thanksgivings than not. But I want to remember when I'm sponsoring that new person, right? Or I'm talking to that new person who binged on Thanksgiving, that it's not like, oh my God, what would make you think of that? It just seemed normal. That's just what I did. So just backtracking a little bit more. So like I said, I grew up as an obese child. I grew out of the Robert Hall Husky shop. I go back to, I get bar mitzvahed, you know, and can't fit in there. So I go to Barney's, I get a brand new men's suit, you know, and it's 1971. Okay. And all my friends have bell bottoms, except for me. So now I can wear a men's suit. I get my pair of bell bottom, my black mohair bell bottom suit. I'm just completely styling. I'm completely excited over this. And then I was 4'6". So by the time they shortened it up to my little tiny legs, I did not have a bell bottom suit. Okay. And I always say that, you know, is this the crux of my compulsive eating that makes, you know, gave me all such issues and all that? Well, yeah, it's part of it. It's part of just feeling like a freak, feeling different. I don't fit in. I'm not like everybody else, you know. And then I learned how that terminal uniqueness can turn on me in other ways too. But that was the way I felt. Like, I don't fit in here. And I'm fat. And, you know, I being a man in a program, or being a child, a boy, you know, in a program, I started when I was 17. Being fat wasn't normal. Being on a diet wasn't normal. Okay, today I don't call it a diet. But back then, any kind of restriction that I did, it was a diet, you know. And so that didn't feel normal either. But I went to, by the time I was 15, I went to a weigh and pay. And, you know, I found the secret of losing weight. It was called bulimia. And my bulimia was different. You know, I won't say different than anybody else's. It wasn't the purging, you know, purging of my food. The idea of purging always made me sick. I couldn't purge. Okay. And even I didn't have bottles of laxatives, right? I just took two as needed, which was daily. Okay. Because I do believe that if you go into those feelings icons, you know, it says happy, sad, angry, you know, and all those things, bloated would be on that list. Okay. That's what I would have had on my list. It would have been bloated. Okay. Because that was a feeling I had very, very often. I thought it was a feeling. Okay. And that bulimia of, so mine, like I said, I didn't do that. But what I did do is I binged and I starved. Mm-hmm. And somebody had told me years ago, they said, when I gave my story one time, they said, oh, so you were bulimic. I was like, no, I wasn't bulimic. They said, well, part of bulimia is not wanting to take responsibility for your actions. It's like, okay, that one I'll go on. You know, I was good with the math. I could binge on this day and then starve the next day. And I could go on that scale. And it started off with not having, you know, having a heavy dinner the first time. And then I didn't have dinner the next time. Then I didn't have lunch or dinner. Then I didn't have breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Then I would take, again, just my two diuretics and laxatives, you know, as needed. I had that feeling of bloated. Learned to pray for the scale, that something would happen, that something would move before I ever got on there, okay? Made my goal weight wearing white cotton pants, a t-shirt, and shaving for the first time, okay? Because I was going to make my goal weight. And it was January, and I hate the cold, but I made sure I took everything off before getting on that what I thought was my higher power, which was the scale. So lose the weight. I'm going to be thin forever. Finally found the cure, you know, until I started working at a luncheonette, a food place. And I was allowed to eat anything I wanted anytime for nothing, which I thought was a good deal. Okay. And in the beginning, I had the meals that, you know, brought my plan, which expanded over time. Very soon. And I'm now eating everything. I'm just eating everything in sight there. In New Jersey, I don't know, maybe everywhere else too, but definitely in New Jersey, the portions are pretty large. Okay. So we used to, I was like, if you can picture like the grill, and then I'd be on the other side of the grill and I'd bring the stuff over the table. And I won't dwell on the food, but I'll just tell you that we used to have, we had french fries. It was like a little mountain, you know, would go all the way over. If one fell off, you wouldn't give the dirty french fry to a customer. So you ate it. Well, I would kind of drop some off. By the time I finally finished, my mountain looked like a volcano that had erupted. Okay. And I actually got caught one time, which was a really embarrassing thing. You know, sneaking is bad. Getting caught eating is bad, but like when you get caught sneaking, you know, that's what I remember. And so very shortly into it, I gained all the weight. You know, I gained 40 pounds, right? Out of, I gained the 40 pounds I had lost at the time. And it was quick. And I remember I would be at the park and I would be writing. I was connecting with God in a very strange way. I was just saying, you know, like, I want to die. Like, I don't want to live like this. You know, I'd rather be, you know, if I can't do this, then I just don't want to live like this, you know. But I didn't want to do it before this bar mitzvah, this wedding, or whatever. Not because of the wonderful event that they were having, but because of the wonderful food that I thought they were having at the smorgasbord. Okay. You know, that's what I wanted. That was what I absolutely that term, I live to eat, fit me. Okay. And so it was my worst period of time. I mean, and I went to a therapist because I was going from an AB average, and now it's down to a D average in my junior year. And, you know, my mother thought, well, maybe you need, you know, a therapist to kind of look at it. And I remember what's interesting is I didn't say these words out loud, but I could say it on paper. And he gave me like these sentences that says, I want, and I put to die, you know, and I was saying all these words. I wanted to be found out, you know. And so finally he's talking to me about it. And I don't think I understood the term suicidal ideation at the time, you know. And but I remember coming home and my mother said, you know, how was you know, your therapy session? I said, it was good. I said, but he did say that he thought that I was suicidal. And I just remember saying, like, that's ridiculous. Like, what part's ridiculous? Like, I shouldn't think this way. Why should I think that way? That's ridiculous. Oh, thank you. Now I'm cured. Now I don't have to think like this anymore because that's ridiculous, you know. And that was, you know, and that really helped me to live my life very to myself when it came to feelings. My humor, I did right outside. You know, I was absolutely class clown. I was all of that stuff because I did learn that if I laughed at myself first, it wasn't such a big deal when you laughed at me, you know. You know, again, being a kid, you know, and probably many of us may have had that bullying and all that, you know, which is now I realize that it's also part of life that happened. I'm sad that it happened. And I'm also kind of accepting. I mean, I've done 4 steps on that, you know, and I think I really have come to terms, you know, with that kind of stuff. And yeah, so it was just a feeling of, you know, not wanting to live like this. But for me, as I understand the suicidal ideation, that it wasn't a matter of doing it because I was afraid to do it. But then I was also afraid to live, you know, and that just creates existence, you know. And that was what I had. So I hear about this place called Overeaters Anonymous, which for anybody who hasn't heard, Susan has heard this about 79 times, and so have Ann and Sandy, is that I hear Overeaters Anonymous. I think so. It's a place where overeaters eat anonymously, that it's a group, a fellowship in the 70s, where it was a lot of love yourself for who you are, you know, which was good because I hated myself. Okay. And I thought it was like, you know, either you can be abstinent, you know, or you know, you could be thin rather, or you can be just happy as who you are. And honestly, I think had I known, you know, I could, you know, being happy with who I was would have been even also just as amazing, but I never was, you know. I did find out before I got to that first meeting that it wasn't about that. It wasn't about, you know, eating anonymously. Because remember, I'm 17 years old. Everything I did was anonymous. Okay, we did it at their house and we did it at this one's house. And oh, your parents aren't home. Great, we're going to be over there, you know. But when I found out that, you know, it was different and they said, they kind of, the person told me, you know, that it was more, you know, for weight loss. I was like, okay, great. This is again before I got there. So I figured, you know, I would go there. And it was in a Y called the Schneider Building in Paterson, New Jersey. And I'm going there and I used to, oh, so to back up with that, I gained the 40 pounds, like I said, at this lunch place. So I'm like, duh, just like Bill says, self-will, you know, self-knowledge, that'll help. Why'd I gain weight? I'm working in a place with this food, duh. So I leave that place and I work at a Y. You know, I work at the Schneider Building Y. And there was no food around. And I gained 15 pounds that month because I'm a compulsive overeater. So if I can't get it conveniently, I'll get it inconveniently. Okay. And so that's what I found out about, you know, that term OA. And I remember, you know, like I said, I went to this meeting expecting like, great. So it's kind of like my way and pay places, you know, but I didn't even have to pay. Of course, I learned about self-supporting through own contributions later on. Okay. But I just thought I didn't have to pay and I can get there. And this guy who's talking is talking about things that he did to his wife and his children and all that. And nowhere did I see a scale. This particular meeting didn't even have the gray sheet on the table. Maybe they did. Maybe they did have it. But nobody really talked about the diet and anything like that. And I was really confused. But because I always felt like an idiot, I didn't want to look like an idiot. So anytime somebody would talk, I went, you know, like I understood. And it turned out that what I was in was a step writing workshop, which was the meeting format. But it was going through the AA book, you know, the AA book, the 12 steps and 12 traditions. Okay. And that was what they had, and that was what they used. And that's what this guy was talking about. Eventually, I started to have a better idea of what this stuff was, you know, what they were talking about. And that kind of happened from getting that guy who came up to me, you know, my next meeting and said, "How'd your week go?" And I said, you know, told him, and he said, "Well, did you talk to your sponsor about that?" And I said, "I don't know what a sponsor is." You know, he said, "Well, I'll sponsor you." He said, "You're going to call me in the morning. You're going to tell me what you're going to eat. Then you'll call me at night. You'll let me know if you ate." I said, "Okay." He said, "I'm a toll call, but you know, it'll be worth it. I think it'll be worth it to you." And I thought it was definitely going to be worth it too, because I wasn't paying the phone bill. So I was in, right? And this guy did a miracle to me, because, you know, he offered to sponsor me. That's why I say that's the superpower. He offered to sponsor me before I even had a chance to judge him, before I even had a chance to say, "Who can sponsor Alan?" Like, "Not you." "No, no, they just talk too much." "Not you." "No, they never talk." This one, "Ugh, they never talk about God." This one, "All they do is talk about God." Right? And nobody's been good enough. Okay. So, as I tell you then, of Alan, of being having probably 15 sponsors in my life, probably more. Okay. My way of ending sponsorship relationships were very simple. I stopped going to that meeting. I stopped calling. I started to kind of like hope that maybe you just like see me one day at the meeting and totally forget. Like, did I ever sponsor him? I don't know. I think I might have. You know, that was the way I ended things. But he got me started, and the food plan was working. That's what was working. And I was able to remember steps. Okay. I don't want to say there wasn't a lot of emphasis on the steps that time. Again, whatever meeting it is that you go, especially if you're a newcomer, this is OA. And I started to go to more and more meetings, but the emphasis or understanding of the steps wasn't there. And again, I looked and I said, "Well, we're doing the steps at the meeting, right? We're reading it." That's what I did in school. Didn't do homework, but I did all the stuff in school. So it felt like it was happening, like I was doing it. And so the diet part worked. The diet and the group support, it was working. And my memory of being able to repeat the steps, knowing the steps and being able to repeat them. Something was happening, right? So I'm like staying away from the food. I'm feeling good. And then I'd hear people in the meeting saying, "Well, you know, thank God I've got today," or "Thank God I've got a few days under my belt," or "I've got 2 weeks. And I thought, like, I don't understand this. Like, I came to lose weight and I'm working with the sponsor and I'm doing everything. Okay. That's the words of where relapse starts. I'm doing everything. Okay. Because let me tell you, I don't know when it happened and what it was and how it was, but I definitely took that first compulsive bite back. By the time I knew that I took that first compulsive bite back, I was way deep into it. You know, I couldn't tell you what it was and how it started, but I can tell you that as an old sponsor had that I had years ago, like she always said to me, she said, you know, the tools, she said, if you don't use all your tools, like if you don't call somebody, it doesn't mean you're going to pick up the food. If you don't read today, it doesn't mean the food's going to be picked up. You know, you don't go to a meeting, it doesn't mean you're going to have to eat, but each tool was cushioning to my abstinence. And so everything that I'd take off was just a layer away. And words changed for me. You know, words changed where I'd say, oh, I can't do that. I've got my meeting, you know, on Sundays. And then I'd say, oh, I can't go to my meeting on Sunday because I've got this, you know. And I don't know that I necessarily knew what was happening, but all of a sudden those people that I couldn't understand, why are they having a problem with the food? Boy, that humbled me. I started to realize it. And then my food just got really haywire. And for the longest time, I just sponsored me, you know, and I really thought that my maintenance weight was just something that went up and down 20 pounds. You know, I'd go up 20 pounds, down 20 pounds, up 20 pounds, down 20 pounds. That is called being really young. Okay. My body could do that. I gain weight. Oh, then I just lose the weight. Okay. Now, if I gain weight, it's kind of like adult acne. Okay. I don't have quite as many of them. I can just get one or two and they're just freaking staying there like forever. Okay. And I'm really working at getting them away. And that's the way the weight would be. It's like the losing and the gaining. Well, the gaining happened much easier. My bulimia, that binging and starving, let me tell you, the binging got much easier. The starving got much, much more challenging. You know, I'm glad that today that I don't go on like crash diets, because I don't feel like I even have the ability to do that. You know, I've had a lot of gifts that have come through the years as a result of this. But anyway, like I'm in relapse, give or take for 10 years. Okay. I said give or take because there was times in between that I had, you know, my food was clean. God knows I was certainly sponsoring a lot of people, not because I had the ability of doing it, but I had the ability to remember all the wonderful things that you said, and I could repeat that back to people. Okay. And, you know, so finally this one woman, said to me that she wanted what I had, right? What did I have? I was thin. Okay. And she lived in Long Island. Okay. And she comes to New Jersey. She comes to my territory. Okay. I'm the king of OA, hence my play and all that. But, you know, I was the king of OA. And who knew that I met this queen or princess? I don't know what she is. Okay. But I meet her at a meeting. I had told her just before the meeting, I said, you know, I had such a rough week. I said, blah, blah, blah. I said, I ate this, I ate that, I ate that, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And then they said, okay, and today's lead will be Alan. And I got up and I talked about losing 40 pounds and doing all that kind of stuff. And she came to me at the end of the meeting. She said, that was great. I said, thank you. I appreciate that. She said, I can't believe like that they're going to believe all this crap that you said, give or take, she said that. Okay. While you've been eating all this time. And so I explained to her that, like, you know, look, I've been in the program a long time. I know what I'm doing. I can explain it, you know, and all that. And I'm a second day learner. I got her phone number, and the second day I called her up and I said, you know what, you're right. Yeah. And I said, you can take my inventory anytime you want. Did you ever wish you didn't say those words to somebody? Okay. Because it happened for the rest of my life and I'm so grateful. Okay. But that was the way that I felt, you know, and finally she's having problems with her weight. She wants what I have, which was thin. Okay. And I'm sponsoring her. And she goes into short time after she goes into a HAL group, right? So for those who know, it's honesty, open mind, and willingness. And there weren't HAL sponsors, or there weren't in this area, and we didn't have Zoom and all this stuff, you know, so it was just starting in our area. And she said, look, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to eat. I have to go to three meetings. And she just told me the little bits that I'd hear about the program. She said, I'm going to do this. And I remember she taught me a really incredible lesson. She was, and this is also before cell phones and all this kind of stuff, you know. And she was going on a cruise. I remember telling her she's going on a cruise that she won't be able to talk then, you know. And it was going to be, you know, a couple of weeks. And I thought, oh, everything I heard about cruises, right? You're eating all the time and all that. She came back from the cruise and I said, how'd you do? She said, well, she said it was good. She said, except for breakfast, the only thing they had was, I don't know, some kind of wheat cereal, right? And I said, okay. So you had like just like a portion. She said, no, I had nothing. I can't eat wheat. That was amazing to me. It never dawned on me that that was even an option. Like if you don't have something, like I thought you just do the best that you can with what you have. And if for me, that would have been just the way I would have rationalized everything, you know, but you didn't. And that stayed with me, you know? So anyway, I'm sponsoring her. Everything's great. And then after realizing that I gained about 20 pounds on my 5'5" on a good day frame, okay? 20 pounds is where everything goes. Okay, I'm 5 pounds to the inch. If I gain 5 pounds, I gain an inch. Okay, and I don't gain it in height. Okay, so I gain it around the waist, right? And at 20 pounds, I thought I should be somewhat honest with her. And I said, look, I said, I've been binging, but I can still sponsor you. You know, I'm clean now. She said, no. She said, I want to sponsor his abstinence. And I said, all right. She said, so what'd you tell your sponsor? Well, first of all, as we know, sponsors could be anonymous. We don't always tell people who our sponsor is. So I thought that was a very rude question, especially since I didn't have a sponsor. You know, I mean, I was sponsoring myself, if that counted at all. Okay. And I started to sweat a little bit. And finally she said, so you've been telling me all this time what to do, and you don't even have a sponsor. I said, no, but, you know, I know this program. I'm in here a lot of years. You know, I've got it. I lead meetings. I do lots of things, you know. I believe my own press releases, you know. And she said, well, that's not going to work. And by the way, somebody give me a 5-minute sign when the time is, if somebody would do that, because I realized I didn't look at the time at all. So I apologize. Anyway, long story short, she said to me, she was also proactive. She said, so I'll sponsor you. I said, okay. Right. Because see, in the 70s, I was a people pleaser. So when that man asked me to sponsor me, I said, yes, because I was a people pleaser. Now it's the 80s. I'm codependent. So when somebody asked me, they said they're going to sponsor me. I said, yes. Right. Well, she started to ask me about my food plan. And at that time, they were talking a lot of, like, you know, abstinence is a way of life, and it's in your own belief, you know, that you're abstinent. I was like, okay, I believed I was good. But she asked me more questions about it. And I realized, she said, well, you know, you're in the program all these years. What do you eat? Okay. And my last food log, I promise. Right. And I said, well, and the reason why I didn't know, she said, what do you want to have? And I didn't know, because my breakfast was banana cake, which was close to a corn muffin, which was close to an English muffin, which was close to whole wheat toast, the rye toast, and the whole wheat toast of the one slice that I was allowed to have with my egg. Okay. That's why I have banana cake. Duh. Okay. So, because when I sponsored myself, I was very, very liberal. Do you think this is okay? I don't see any reason why I can't. Okay, fine. Okay. And that was even when I ever took the time to even think about things, because usually things just went into my mouth. Okay. Anyway, she thought that may not be the right idea. And she talked about ways that I did before, came up with a plan, got abstinent. And then she started me working on the steps. Okay. The steps that when she asked where I was at, and I said, well, 10, 11, and 12. And she said, how'd you get there? And I just figured by math, you can't be in the program this long and not have done that far. And, but she got me really working on the steps. And when I got to the, you know, so of course I did my third steps. I did writing on the steps, and writing on the steps is not doing the steps, but it connects you to the steps for me. It connected to me on what I needed to do next. And I got to the fourth step and I said, I pretty much have done that. She said, pretty much how? I said, well, I let people know who I am, you know, and which was the biggest lie that I had. Okay. I let people know all the fluff and stuff. You know, oh, I procrastinate. Oh, me too. You know, all that kind of stuff. And finally, we had a yin-yang kind of relationship, okay? And she knew that, you know, she couldn't make me do something. And she said something to me that was so ridiculously sensible is why I did it. She said, you know what? You don't have to do your fourth step. Thank God. Did I have the best sponsor said you don't have to do your fourth step? Okay. She said, but there's a good chance that you're going to pick up the food again. Logic said, Well, that's what I always did. I always picked up the food again. You know, so I write up this four step and she got me with a loophole. She said, if you do a thorough, fearless moral inventory, you'll never have to do this again. I'm like, okay, everything's going down. Okay. So I wrote it, and this was before computers, before I got out of computer, and I'm writing it by hand, and I'm answering questions, and I'm doing other ways to do this, and holes are actually coming in the paper, and then I did it in code. Okay, that was it too, right? Because I didn't want my ex, then current wife at that time, okay, to see it, right? So I'd have like D-O-X or something, like, you know, like, deriving from blah blah blah, you know. And so when I gave away my fifth step, it was a miracle, because first of all, she gave me a miracle of the idea that she said, you don't have to give your fifth step to me, you just have to give it away. And she separated those fourth and fifth step. And because, again, if I wanted to be honest, had I known who I was going to give it to, I would have had a much nicer past that I would have written down. But I didn't. So I just wrote it honestly. And we sat in a diner for hours on end when I read it, because ultimately she was the person I gave it to. And a miracle happened through that, because she ahad when she was supposed to, didn't say a thing when she wasn't, you know, and shared at the right time. And to this day, that's what I always pray for when I take somebody else's four step, that I ahad at the right time, shut up when I'm supposed to, and share at the right time. And all those deep, dark secrets that somebody once taught me, that if they have a name for it, it's been done. Okay. I was able to share with this person in a really loving way. Okay. Now, at the time, we didn't do 6 and 7 in the same way, or we didn't use it as the list. You know, I did my four step in three columns. Okay. Because I saw the pictures in the book. Okay, and it says, like, I'm mad at Mr. Brown because he did this, right? I think there's three columns, or maybe the fourth column, right? But we didn't go into all the reasons and what was going to happen, okay? But for some crazy reason, by the time I learned what 6 and 7 were, and learning the simplicity of it, that I was ready to get rid of this stuff and that I could pray for it, you know? But my list itself, she tore up. I said, do you know how long that took me to write? She said, you've already lived this. Okay, you don't need to see this. Well, you know, had that. But when I did my ACE, like, you know, as I did 6 and 7, when I did my A step, do you know that the people on the list were the people who harmed me? How does that work out? Okay, this was before I read the big book, before I understood the big book. Okay, it was working for me. Promises were happening for me. All this kind of stuff was happening. And the real secret to this was the idea of working with others. Okay. Right now, I you know, my sponsor is a male. I sponsor only men in the program, because that works. These were also the guys that I was so afraid of, because I didn't think that I fit in. I have feelings. Guys don't have feelings. What am I doing here with feelings? Well, guess what? When I met with these other guys, they had feelings too. It was miraculous, you know? I do believe that that is why there's an entire chapter that talks about working with others, you know? She got me working with others. She also got me, I always said that this particular sponsor, she was the catalyst of my abstinence. She got me, before the word networking was in vogue, and I guess that's not the right word to use, but it got me connected to other people. I didn't just rely on my sponsor. If I wasn't there, I can call somebody. I could call Susan, but it was very scary. I knew that I had to make sure that I knew what the hell I was saying, you know. But, you know, really, I could talk to anybody. And I could, when she'd go away, you know, I had substitute sponsors. You know, and that's what I do now. When I go away, I talk to my guys and say, you know what, let's get somebody, you know, if I'm not going to be around, if my hours are so different, you know. And, you know, she taught me all through that. The idea of giving service, okay, Started off with intergroup, right? Well, I mean, started off really with the meeting. Okay. By the way, I should never be treasurer or secretary. Not treasurer because I'm dishonest. Treasurer because it's like, what did I do with that? I think I had it somewhere. Okay. I shouldn't be treasurer. Okay. Secretary because I don't know what the heck I'm writing or any of that stuff. Okay. But other services I should do. And I've done them in the group and I've been the, you know, chaired groups and meeting leader and all that kind of stuff. And then I got into intergroup. Okay. And I was really confused. I did not know why there was like people talking so nasty to each other. That was really what it was. I mean, I can't even put it in different words. And then it got a little bit better and people weren't talking nasty. They would just, when you talk, they just go, you know, they didn't say the words. And it was pretty rough for a time. Thank God it didn't stay that way. And, you know, things like Robert's Rules and things like that, you know, those kind of helped. And all of a sudden we started to hear things differently. Through intergroup, I got into region. And through region, I learned some great gifts. You know, I always thought like, if it has to be done, I better do it. I got to get it done. And then they taught me that, you know what, if nobody volunteers or nobody does it, doesn't get done. That's it. Because that is really the group conscience. That's them saying, you know what? No, it's not that important to me. Can't do it. And individually, by the way, when I ask people for service or I do service, I ask it individually. Then I can find out, oh, you know what? You're away during then. You can't do it that way. Oh, you work during that time. You're not able to do it or you just don't like it. And it started to have me learn, like, instead of asking, could you do the whole thing? Like, can you do this piece? Because that's what I was able to do. I was able to do this piece of it. Could do lots of little pieces to different things. Through region, I remember that I was in Region 7 at the time, and the then trustee and the chair came to me, and I was thinking about one of the committees to be able to chair, you know, one of the committees. And they said, you know, we'd like you to think about running for a service position. I was actually thinking about chairing one of the committees, you know, thinking about doing that. She said, we want you to think about running, you know, for region chair. And my first mouth was like, no, I don't do that. Okay. Because what I really thought was, I don't do that well. Okay. So no, I'm not going to do something that I don't do well. Because I always say that anything I did really well because that was all I tried for. Okay. But region, this, I did not know if I would be able to do this. And they said, do you meet the qualifications? Well, yeah. Okay. I met the qualifications. You know, do you have the physical time, you know, whatever it was, I knew the commitment. It was, yeah. And do you have the health to do that? Yeah. And at the time, Beverly and I were married. So my wife's in program, many people who know. And, you know, it was like, I talked to my sponsor. I talked to my higher power. And I talked to my wife. And ultimately came out and said, yeah, I should run for chair. And I got elected, you know, as Region 7 chair. I was so scared. Okay. And I met some people actually from Cleveland at that, as when I took chair very shortly after we had a rotating assembly and we had it in Region 5. Who knew? Right. And in Region 5, we were in Madison and I met Sandy and Ann, you know, and I met I got Mary Ann. I met, you know, a lot of people that I got to know. And I remember sitting with the region chairs and one of the chairs was saying, you know, like, this is something that I do well. Like, I feel really comfortable with this because they had done this for a while. And I thought, oh my God, I just want to be able to do it at all. Is that a 5-minute notice thing? Anybody know? Okay. The word shut up is okay.
Almost. No, okay. You're good. You've got about another 7 minutes.
Okay, thanks, Beth. So, you know, I I ended up getting elected. And I thought, like I said, I went to this assembly and I was so nervous. And I just thought, let me just be able to do it at all. Okay. And I think at that time it was 2 years and then you could run for another 2 years. And somebody had told me, and they were so right, that, you know, I ran for the 2 years, you know. And they said, you really want to probably rerun, you know, your second term, because the first year is like, you're just kind of learning it and you're getting it. Then second 2 years, it feels like I can now put it into practice. So I did that. And it was a great gift. And we went to World Service. Okay. And for those who feel about nepotism, okay, my wife and I were both in World Service. Okay. Many times on opposite microphones, pro and con. Okay. I can't tell you who won more, but there were. And through those kind of services, that is where I learned to like truly let go through the group conscience. Cause I would, you know, argue my point of why I think this should be done. And I'd hear the other point. And if it went a different way, it was like, okay. I didn't hold anything back, like I wish I had said that or anything like that. Came to Region 5, got involved in the same services. And there was, they had chosen me for I was part of that nomination to take over somebody's spot as trustee. Same situation. I prayed, talked to my sponsor, talked to my wife, and did it, talked to work. Then it came time to run. It was the right time, and I ran, and like, okay, now I had it. And then it came time when it was to rerun. My head was in a different spot. See, I had lost my job. My wife had lost her job. And then my granddaughter, who lived with us, we were a five-generation household at one point, or four-generation, became pregnant. Okay. And I remember them saying, you got to get your application in. I thought, well, okay, application I can get in. But I remember thinking about how I was going to talk to Beverly. And I remember thinking how I had to sit at just the right time to say, hey, you know, what do you think about rerunning? And I remember, and my wife's really strong, but it was a hard time. And I just remember saying, look, if you want to do it, just do it. You know, that's code words for, I really wish you wouldn't do that. You know, but you didn't say that. But God said that. And I was so disappointed. I was like, I really wanted to do this. But God's message was so clear. It was like, no, you can't. You got to stop. And so I don't have a problem hearing God's message. I may have a problem wanting to do it. When I start to think about it, it is the easy, the part in the promises where it says, it just happens. Like we intuitively know how to handle things, you know. We're not fighting it. When I do that, I know that that's God's will. When I'm thinking, well, this is how I could do it if I just work it like this, it's not. So I didn't run that time, but I still gave service. I still stayed in the rooms. The service I give now is more on a basis of the meeting and what's going on. And just recently, I retired, 99.5% retired, okay? And this is a gift to be able to stay awake at 8 o'clock at night, my time, and be able to give a lead and be with all of you people. So many of you that I know and love, and so many that I learned at a meeting and know and love. Anyway, with that, I pass. Thank you.